Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. I'm your host, Mark Daly, and welcome back to the show on a non-Grand Prix weekend. Yes, we finally have a weekend off. We have, what, six rounds under our belt now for the 2020 Formula One World Championship? And it feels a little bit weird that we don't have a race this weekend, although we did have a break between Hungary and the British Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago, but still, I know it's a lot of work for the teams, but I rather like these triple headers. Sure, it helps if some of these triple headers are back-to-back races at the same track on subsequent weekends, but hey, it works. And after having that very long off season because of COVID and the delayed start to the 2020 World Championship, I'm just wanting to get in as much racing as we possibly can, and sounds like we are going to be getting a final word pretty soon as to what the final formalized schedule is going to be. Sounds like a couple of races are going to fall off that have been in talks or been mentioned in the conversation for perhaps hosting a race, and then maybe Turkey's going to come on board. We're going to get onto that in a little bit, but sounds like they're going to hit that sweet spot that they've really been looking for. Chase Carey has been saying for months and months that they really wanted to get a season in of between 15 to 18 races. We have 13 confirmed races at the moment. And it sounds like by the time it's all said and done, we're going to end up with 17, which considering how uncertain things were just, 4 or 5 months ago when COVID really started to spiral out of control and things were getting canceled left, right, and center. Let's be honest. I think we were all worried that, not just for the Formula One season, but so many other things, of course, but certainly it didn't seem like the season was going to get off the ground at all at one point, or at least that's how it felt. And it didn't help when you had guys like Bernie Ecclestone, former Formula One Supremo, saying that he would have canceled the season outright. But I think Liberty should be given credit for what they've been able to pull off so far. We still have 11 races to go, if that's how it completely works out. And I think that's going to be, I think that'll be great. I was thinking a little bit to myself, just how much sort of expectant, I guess it is, maybe even a little bit entitled, heaven forbids, that when I was thinking earlier today, 17, man, that means that we lost five whole races off of what we were going to have this year had the season gone ahead as it should have done. And then I thought, gosh, don't be so stupid, It's just like thinking that we lost five races, but considering everything that's happened since the beginning of this year, that even a shortened Formula One season of only 17 races, and I'm using the inverted commas here, that would be a bad thing. But it isn't. I think it's a wonderful thing, and really looking forward to it. But yes, sort of getting back to what I was saying right off the top of the show here, that I've rather grown quite fond of these triple header race weekends. And well, we got a week to wait until we get back to racing in Belgium, and then they're going to come thick and fast again with Spa, Monza, and then Mugello at the end of August and beginning of September. So they're going to be coming fast and furious again, and it's I think it's going to be a really enjoyable second, well, not quite second half of the season, I guess the two-thirds of the schedule that are going to come ahead of us. And it'd be nice to see Turkey come back. Looking forward to going to the Nürburgring, Portimao, Imola, Mugello, all these races that we never expected to see, obviously just a couple of months ago. Anyways, I've rambled a little bit more than I intended to off the top of the show here, but it's all good. Got some things to talk about this weekend. It's like I say, it's not a race weekend, and and kind of gives us an opportunity to sit back and kind of digest what's happened over the first month and a bit of the Formula One season. And it's been interesting, hasn't it? In some ways, it feels a little bit predictable, what with the Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton charging ahead at the top of the Constructors and Drivers World Championship standings, which we're pretty used to seeing at this point. But we've also seen that Mercedes have a bit of an Achilles heel when it comes to how the car performs in the heat, especially how hard it is on the tires. So that was unexpected. And I still think it's interesting, you know, these tracks that we haven't seen or we don't race at very often or haven't raced at for a very long time. I know that some of the drivers, especially the older ones, have raced in places like Turkey, you know, should that come on, and some of them raced elsewhere. But I think it's they're just because the schedule has been so mixed up, and I think it really could, I'm hoping more than anything, that it maybe kind of throws in a little bit of unpredictability into the season as it goes along. Because let's face it, we've seen the races that we have so far more or less in the time slot that we usually see, with the exception of Spain. Obviously, we see Spain in the middle of May rather than the middle of August. But hey, 2020, and it is what it is. But still, you know, it is going to be interesting, because once we get past these next two races at Spa and then Monza, then it really becomes this patchwork of a season, with some races still more or less where they're supposed to be, and then all these other ones that have sort of come on board have been rescheduled and kind of stop gaps and all that. So I'm really hoping that that's going to throw in some unpredictability. I mean, Sebastian Vettel talked about it a couple of weeks ago, saying, you know, how it's going to be quite something to go to the Nürburgring at the beginning of October. I mean, the season is more or less scheduled around going to these different venues, these different tracks at a good time of year when the conditions are better. I mean, they were at one point still talking about maybe bringing the Canadian Grand Prix back in October, but the race organizers said, you know, that's far too late in the year to have decent weather and to be able to put on a good race and stuff like that. And I mean, as you know, I mean, it can get quite cold and wintry in Montreal. So, well, I mean, maybe not that time of year, but I don't know. I mean, it is motor racing, and as great as it is to see these cars and running on the tracks in beautiful weather and stuff like that, you know, you need these races at times as well. When the conditions aren't that great, it really separates the good drivers from the great drivers, I think, because you really see who excels in wet conditions. We all know how good Max Verstappen is. I mean, he is that driver of this current generation who really is that really talented guy in the wet weather. But, you know, there's still a long way to go. I mean, the way that it's looking so far, that the last race of the year at Abu Dhabi is going to be pushed back about two weeks later than usual. I think it's about the December 13th or 14th thereabouts, rather than last week in November. So that it's going to be fun to see going to some of these different places, and we'll see what happens. But certainly, if we get some of these wet weather races, you know, that could really shake things up again. And hopefully it does. I mean, if Lewis goes on to win the championship, absolutely no problem with that. I just don't want him to wrap it up before we get to Labor Day here in a couple of weeks in North America. I want to see it drawn out a little bit. I mean, we've seen Max fight back a little bit over the past couple of weeks, whereas Valtteri Bottas has really gone off the boil. Not that, honestly, I don't really think he was a contender or is a contender to Lewis, even though they have the same car. I mean, he's made too many mental mistakes and had too many issues so far this year. Okay. The tire thing at Silverstone at the British Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago, that was unavoidable, but Lewis had to deal with the same thing. Unfortunately for Valtteri, he had to deal with it for less than a lap on the final lap of the race. So it really didn't compromise him too badly, because he still had such a big lead over Max that he didn't lose out. But, you know, Valtteri made two really, really, really big mistakes at the start in Hungary, and then he didn't have a great start in Spain last weekend either. And that's really gone and thrown a wrench into his championship bid, because that that's one thing. I mean, you can pretty much expect that that Mercedes is going to design and build a bulletproof car. And you can also count on the bulletproofness, if you want to call it that, of the mentality, the mental strength that Lewis Hamilton has. And the fact that the guy just rarely makes a mistake. It just doesn't happen. I mean, he's been that good for so many years now. I mean, it seems like a long, long time ago since this guy came into Formula One. I mean, he's been a rock star ever since. I mean, look at all the races, 6 world championships, all the records that he holds. Sure, he's one of the best. I mean, that conversation, it has to be had, regardless if he's still an active driver or not. And, you know, it is interesting. I was thinking about it a little bit earlier this week, just when we do have that conversation, how does Lewis Hamilton line up against some of the greats, like Ayrton Senna, Fangio? You know, take any one of those great drivers from the past, Stirling Moss, Jim Clark, whoever, you know, whoever you think are the best drivers in Formula One. I mean, there's some obvious ones in there. We all might have a couple of drivers here and there that we might want to promote over another. But I think it all comes down to one thing. Lewis, definitely one of the greats, definitely the best driver in this current of generation of drivers, without a doubt on both counts. But when it comes down to how does he line up against a guy like Juan Manuel Fangio, I don't really know how you can reconcile that, because I mean, Fangio raced decades ago in the 1950s, and Lewis races in the modern era. And that's not to suggest in any shape, way, or form that just because Lewis Hamilton is driving the latest, greatest, most technologically advanced Formula One car in the world, each era has its own unique set of challenges and difficulties and things that you know, the drivers have to get on top of. And I mean, they very much have to master themselves. They have to master the car and the track. And just because Lewis has this wonderful piece of technology in the W11 compared to what Fangio was driving all those years ago, doesn't make it necessarily easier for him in any way. So I don't know. That's you know, maybe some of you have an idea how to rank guys across different decades and generations and years of Formula One. But for me, the guys that are the greats in the sports, regardless if they raced in 1950 or 2020, it's kind of irrelevant. You kind of look at the names, the Schumachers, the Sennas, the Hamiltons, whoever. I mean, they are the legends of the sport, and I think they should all be appreciated and admired and respected in their own right. But still, I mean, some of you might want to go out there and say, I think so-and-so is the greatest driver ever, and that's great too. Anyways, shall we get into the news? It's been long enough. I mean, we're creeping up on the break here, slowly but surely. But we'll start off with the news this week that, and this for me is a bit of a shock, that all 10 of the teams have actually signed on to the new Concorde Agreement. I don't know if this is 2020. I don't know if there was something in the water. They've all drank the Kool-Aid or whatever. But coming from the era that I grew up with in the 80s and the 90s, and every time there was a little minor disagreement, it seemed like there was going to be a big schism, and Formula One was going to be blown 7 ways from Sunday, and Ferrari would always threaten to pull away, maybe start their own rival series, and it just seemed like it was a recurring theme over such a long amount of time. And then I don't know if it's just maybe, you know, you've got the new owners in Formula One. I mean, obviously, when you had Bernie Ecclestone, it was very much, either you have the money to race in Formula One, or you want to be in Formula One, or a combination thereof. But if you don't have the money and don't want to be here, fine, you don't have to be here. There's the door. You know, don't let it hit you on the way out, kind of thing, right? And that's how Bernie ran business. I mean, that's how he ran Formula One. He built it into what it is over the course of 40 years. But it wasn't really sustainable. Like, I don't like to see a lot of turnover. I don't like to see like all these, big power struggles out in the open. And that's why I find it really fascinating what we've seen over the past several months. First of all, you had all these, emergency measures that were put into place because of COVID and everything like that. You could understand, obviously, there was a lot of mutual benefit for everyone to try and just take a step back as we figure on what's going on in our communities, in our countries, around the world with this with this pandemic and the way it's affecting obviously our communities and people's health and business and just everyday life, that made perfect sense. And you could see why there was a benefit across all 10 teams and at all levels to come to some sort of agreement. But just because of that alone, but also what I found fascinating is that all these discussions regarding the cost cap and even though it wasn't sorted out overnight, I mean, there was a bit of pushback from Ferrari who wanted this. They didn't want to go that low. I mean, still, I mean, the big discussion was more on the amount that that they should have for the cost cap that's going to come in next year, rather than the default setting for Ferrari that I guess people of my generation are more used to, that whereas they basically threatened to blow the whole thing up and walk away and take their toys with them. But still, I mean, to see that with relatively small amount of debate or that sort of spilling over into media and into the fan areas of Formula One was really quite astounding. And then also to see this this news from earlier this week that all the teams had signed on to the Concorde Agreement, because just a week ago and even over the weekend at the Spanish Grand Prix, it was kind of uncertain. Toto Wolff was saying that, hey, well, you know, if nobody signs on to it right now, it's not a big deal. You know, it'll get done at some point, you know, more or less. I'm kind of parsing and paraphrasing here. But basically, he was saying if it doesn't happen right now, it's not really a big deal. But all of a sudden, just fast forward a couple of days, and all of a sudden, you've got all the teams that have signed on to it. I think that's really, really surprising. Anyways, I got a couple more thoughts on that to get to it after the break, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
While sports can bring us so much joy, it can also bring us a lot of unwanted stress, and that stress can make it difficult to concentrate, relax, and get decent sleep. Sunday Scaries was launched in 2017 by two best friends and business partners, Bo Schmidt and Mike Sill. They operated a full-service bar with 50 employees and were always exhausted. They tried all kinds of products, but they didn't work. Then they started experimenting with CBD. They loved the effects and regained control of their days and nights, but they wanted better CBD products. So what they did for themselves was specially formulate CBD gummies with vitamins D3 and B12 that were super consumable, easy to take on the go, and effective. Long story short, their specially formulated CBD products and vitamins helped relieve the overwhelming angst they felt on a daily basis. So in July 2017, they named the company Sunday Scaries and began sharing their products with friends and launched their online store at SundayScaries.com. With tens of thousands of customers, monthly subscribers, and a 100% money-back guarantee, Sunday Scaries has always been on a mission to transform a worrisome nation into a chill one. And right now, we have a bonus for you. Get 25% off all products at SundayScaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME. Again, 25% off all products at SundayScaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME.
Hey guys, this is Greg Peterson, host of the podcast Hoopin' with Hoops. Despite the fact that college basketball is in the offseason, it's never too early to get a jump start on taking a look at these teams, because there is now 357 of them for the upcoming 2020-2021 college basketball season. I'm going to give you guys a deep dive on every last one of them, keep up with all the transfers in college basketball, and so much more. You are able to subscribe to Hoopin' with Hoops on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And yes, well, we're talking about Formula One and how all the 10 Formula One teams have signed on to the new Concorde Agreement, which means they are now committed to the sport from 2021 to 2025, which I think is great. Gives us some more stability moving forward. And that's what we really need right now. I mean, there's enough drama, enough uncertainty going on everywhere else in the world. And obviously what with COVID and all everything else that's going on. So, I think it's really impressive that they've managed to get it done. There was formal confirmation earlier this week that teams like McLaren, Ferrari, and Williams had signed on. And then on Wednesday, the FIA announced that all the teams had actually had signed on and met the early sign-on deadline. And I think that's absolutely astounding. They had a joint statement that was released and it said, quote, the FIA and Formula One can today confirm that all 10 teams have agreed to the Du Concord Agreement. This follows extensive discussion over the past 12 months with all teams, Formula One and the FIA. The agreement will secure the long-term sustainable future for Formula One, and combined with the new regulations announced in October 2019 that come into force in 2020 will reduce the financial and on-track disparities between the teams, helping to level the playing field, creating closer racing on the track that the fans want to see more of. Closer racing will attract more fans to the sport, benefiting every team and continuing to increase the global growth of Formula One, end quote. Well, you know, honestly, I mean, that is the big question, is that all these measures that they've tried to put in place and that are going to put into place, that are going to come in, what with the cost cut, the new technical regulations that have been set back a year because of COVID, and now are going to be coming out in 2022. That really is the big question. Are these measures going to make a difference, and is it going to change things on the track? I mean, let's be honest. This race that we saw last weekend really was not that exciting. I mean, it was pretty boring. I don't want to suggest that it takes away anything from the victory that Lewis Hamilton deserved. I mean, he went out there. I mean, he just nailed it. I mean, he was in the zone. I mean, he even said so himself. I don't want to take away from the individual accomplishments from the teams and the drivers and everybody that worked so hard over the course of a weekend, but just the way that the sport is, I mean, you still don't see a lot of passing at times. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like that I think that's the case each and every race, because clearly it's not. And we've had some very, very good races in recent times. I think it's gotten a little bit better since 2017, since the current cars came into effect. But, you know, especially at a track like Barcelona, you got to take it with a pinch of salt, I think, because this is a track that they basically can drive around with their eyes closed. I mean, they do more laps there over the course of their careers than anywhere else. I mean, they test there obviously over the winter, and they're very, very familiar with it. And I think maybe that just on a bit of a tangent here, that I think maybe to an effect that Mercedes were able to mitigate the damage that they had, or the potential for the damage to the tires that they saw at Silverstone for the 70th anniversary Grand Prix a couple of weekends ago. And they were able to mitigate that in Barcelona, because just the fact that they are there so often, and if they know how the car is going to behave, and they know some of these factors, if it's going to be anywhere that they really have a clear picture, it's going to be Barcelona, just because they have so much data and knowledge on that track. But anyways, you know, going back to what I was saying, that like tracks like Barcelona, we don't see a lot of overtaking, and that is my real hope for going forward into 2021, into 2022, that, you know, the cost cap and the bringing the cost down for everybody equally across the board, that this is going to translate into more competitiveness on the track, that the new cars, that they're going to reduce the aero effect and the disturbed air behind the cars, and that they're going to be able to follow closer and have more opportunities for overtaking. But we really won't know until what looks great on paper and that has been tested, obviously simulated in the computers, we really still won't know until they actually get on the track and start racing. And then we can prove, okay, well, the theory actually pans out as everybody hoped it did or expected it would, and or it doesn't. But of course, we won't see until it actually happens. But going back to my original thought, I do think that getting all this big business done on a lot of the back end stuff in Formula One over the past 6 months or so, it really is amazing. And I have to give a lot of credit to all the parties involved, because this really isn't the Formula One that I've grown up with, and many of you have grown up with. So it's a bit of a mind blower, but in a good way. So happy to see it. Anyways, Ferrari, they said the signing of a new Concord agreement agreement offers Formula One growth. And I think that is interesting. And I think that's important. And that goes back to that that joint statement that was released by the FIA, that that this new Concorde agreement does offer the framework, and so do all these measures and these new regulations to make the sport more exciting, make it more competitive. And I think that obviously that the add-on or the follow-up on that is that if the racing is more exciting, if the championship is more exciting, if it's more unpredictable, that the championship is not going to be decided halfway through the season, that's decided later on, and there's more than one, you know, the two drivers in the same team fighting for it, you know, obviously, you know, Mercedes is the name that that comes to mind in this era, you know, Ferrari and another, McLaren maybe, Williams, you know, go back over the years and decades. I mean, the way that Formula One has always been is that there's always been one very dominant team, you know, Red Bull's another one that obviously deserves a shout out and be included in that group, that have been extremely dominant at one point in Formula One for sometimes for a shorter or longer period of time. And you know, it gets a little bit repetitive. And I know this maybe sounds, you know, you kind of, well, this guy was a big Michael Schumacher fan. How can he say something like that? You know, criticize Mercedes and Lewis for all the winning that they've done over the past several years since 2014. And yeah, I mean, to be quite honest, towards the end, no matter how much of a fan of Schumacher I was, it did kind of lose its, I don't want to say it lost its appeal, but it certainly wasn't as exciting towards the end of that run as it was at the beginning, because, you know, it became a little bit predictable. And like I say, I don't really mind at the end of the year who wins it. It just, I'd like to see more excitement in it. I want to see more challenging. I'd love to see Lewis pushed over the course of the entire season rather than running off at breakneck speed and establishing a huge lead in the championship where, you know, he can kind of manage it the way that he needs to. Not that he ever backs off. I'm not accusing Lewis of that at all. I mean, he races hard each and every weekend, but certainly it would be great to see him fight closer with his teammate, the Ferraris, the Red Bulls, whoever, you know, that it would be great to see more of an even playing field. But at the end of the day, too, I mean, regardless if you have these cost-cutting measures in place, it still makes me wonder, too, how especially attracting people to teams might work. Because regardless if they have all the same financial framework to operate in, you still have to think that teams like Ferrari, teams like Mercedes are still going to get the cream of the crop and the pick of the very best just because they're Ferrari and they're Mercedes. And if you know, you're somebody that has that skills and knowledge, and you know, you're able to, you know, get one of those cool jobs that so many of us would love to have in Formula One, you know, if you're lucky enough and you're smart enough and, you know, like I say, you've got the qualifications to be there, you can imagine that that you're going to want to be racing or working for the very best, like a Mercedes or a Ferrari, compared to, say, you know, no disrespect intended, but, you know, I don't think there's really a comparison. Would you rather be working for Ferrari? Would you rather be working for Williams or Haas or somebody like that? You know, no disrespect intended to them, but still, you got to wonder. It is going to be good in one way, that teams just can't run away and spend how much they want on whatever they want, on whoever they want, and spend like there's no tomorrow. So I think it's a good thing, but certainly just because that framework is in place to level spending, I don't think means that it's going to completely level the playing field as completely intended, because there'll be different ways that might be more attractive for people to work in Formula One. Anyways, just my 2 cents. Anyways, like I was saying, Ferrari says that they believe that there's a lot of growth that can be found in Formula One. And Lewis Camilleri, the CEO of Ferrari, said, quote, "We are pleased to have signed up again to what is commonly known as the Concorde Agreement, which will regulate F1 for the next 5 years. It is an important step to ensure the stability and growth of the sport. We are very confident that the collaboration with the FIA and Liberty Media can make F1 even more attractive and spectacular while preserving its status as the ultimate technological challenge. Racing is in Ferrari's DNA, and it is no coincidence that the Scuderia is the only team that has participated in every edition of the FIA Formula One World Championship, becoming an integral and essential part of its success, and today, and as in the past, and above all, in the future. End quote. So yeah, I mean, that is interesting. I do think that, as Camilleri says, if this new agreement makes the sport more attractive and spectacular, that definitely will make, I don't think it will attract just more fans to Formula One. I think it will attract more sponsors, more media interest. I think it'll also increase maybe interest from the engine manufacturers and constructors. So who knows? I mean, sometimes I think that the grid that we see with 10 teams and 20 cars seems about right, seems about perfect. And sometimes I kind of think, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice to maybe see a couple more teams in Formula One? And if so, where is that that imaginary line that says, okay, what is good? Is this good right here? Or can we add on a little bit more? But I still think that Liberty, no doubt, they have done a good job since they came in and took over from Ecclestone a couple of years ago now. I mean, we haven't really seen big leaps and bounds forwards. I think that that they've really taken some time to really figure out the business that they've become involved in. I think that on the social media side, they've done quite a bit. I think that they've made things a lot more accessible. I like the idea of the F1 TV Pro. I know that that there have been some technical glitches because 2020 unfortunately some of you have had to experience and put up with for something that's it's a premium product and it's not cheap, but I mean they've shown a lot of initiative on things like that, and I think that that they're clever enough to recognize the history of Formula One, whereas they've still looked into bringing in new venues. I mean, I'm disappointed that the Vietnamese Grand Prix in Hanoi didn't go off this year, but you know, I mean, there's a reason why it didn't. I mean, this pandemic thing has really messed up so many things, but it's disappointing because that's one of these new tracks. Really looks like it's a good venue. It looks like it should be somewhere really fun. So we got to wait a while to see that. But still, I mean, I'm all for adding these new tracks, but I don't want to lose the classics. I don't want to lose like a Spa. I don't want to lose a Monza or a Silverstone. I think it's really crazy to think that that with recent times we haven't had a French Grand Prix. And the German Grand Prix has been a little bit hit and miss over the years. I mean, obviously we're going to have the Nürburgring this year, but some of these tracks you got to balance the good with the old. Recognize the history with Formula One, but still add new tracks to the mix as and when. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that to have what or build on what they inherited and add a couple new tracks here and there. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey guys, Greg Peterson here with the Baseball Betting Podcast. As we know, the MLB season is back in our lives. It's going to be a 60-game sprint unlike anything that we've ever seen before. And I'm going to be giving you picks every single day, 7 days a week with Major League Baseball. We're also going to be keeping up with the KBO as well. If you like baseball and you like being able to make some money, subscribe to the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And before we get back into the rest of the news, let's just go over quickly and just take a break from our break, and so to speak, and let's just quickly run down the driver standings in the World Championship and also the constructors. Of course, Lewis Hamilton still on top with 132 points, leading Max Verstappen. It was in second for Red Bull, Valtteri Bottas third, Charles Leclerc fourth in the Ferrari, and then Lance Stroll in the first of the Racing Point cars, rounding out the top five drivers in the World Championship thus far. And who would have thought that a couple months ago that Lance Stroll would have been one of the drivers in the top five at this point in the season? But good for him. Excuse me. Anyways, on the constructors' standings side of thing, no surprise here. I have Mercedes leading the way at 221 points. Red Bull in second place in the constructors, 135 racing points. Mercedes, 63 points. McLaren is in fourth with 62 points. And then you have Ferrari rounding out the top five with 61 points. And what a logjam there. Third through fifth in the World Championship, you have the three teams within a couple of points of each other. So that's obviously going to change here and there, but it still just blows my mind to see a Ferrari top, almost out of the top five, just sort of hanging on. But I mean, there is about not quite 30 points between Ferrari and Renault, who are in sixth, but still you expect to see Ferrari much closer to the top than where they are right now. So don't really need to get into that too much. We know how much they're struggling. But still, it is a bit of a mind blower, and especially when you hear some of the things that they've been talking about at Maranello, that it's going to be a couple of years. They're not really expecting to be back in the hunt to be winning races until 2022, and that's a little bit discouraging, I think, if you're a Ferrari fan, considering that it really isn't all that long ago since they were really challenging Mercedes. They were more on an even footing. It was only as recent as 2018, and last year was pretty much hit and miss, but it was a lot more hit than they're having this year. I mean, it's just really, really rough. I mean, just look at the struggles that Charles Leclerc had last weekend with the electrical problem, and then seatbelt was too loose. I mean, that just seemed kind of crazy. And then all the struggles that Sebastian Vettel's had with his car this year. Just not a good place where they're at right now. But, I mean, they have done a lot over the past couple to several months, reorganizing the structure of the team. And, ultimately they'll be judged on whether or not those changes were effective or not. But, it really seems that this year is going to be an annus horribilis for them. And, I really don't expect to see them turning around this year, although it would be nice to see them a lot further up. But you got some other teams that have stepped up in the meantime. I mean, there's obviously a lot of controversy with Racing Point, but it's also good to see McLaren up there. I think that they've really made some very, very positive steps in their resurgence and their renaissance, if you want to call it that, over the past couple of years. So good to see them up where they're at. We're going to talk about them in a little bit as well. Well, actually, we're going to talk about them right now when I look at my notes. And Andreas Seidel, the team principal, said that he's actually quite happy that they've decided to enforce a ban on testing at some of these new tracks that they're going to be testing at. So they do allow the sporting regs allow teams to run 2018 spec cars without limitation on mileage as long as they keep the governing body informed. And a lot of the teams have actually been planning to go to Portimao, Imola, or Mugello before they have the races there over the coming weeks and months. The teams, they're also allowed to do limited running in their current cars. I think it's 100 kilometers, I believe, off the top of my head, but they use special tires for that and not the normal compounds that that they use for racing or for testing. So, but still, I mean, it would give you the opportunity even in the relatively short distance of 100 kilometers to kind of get dialed into a track and get a feel for it, especially for one that they haven't been to for a long time, like Imola, or in some cases ever when it comes to Portimao. But I think it is a good idea that Ross Brawn, who's the sporting motorsport director at Formula One, he wanted to put put the kibosh on that and not let that go through. And he basically stated that that it would be the cost, and that the fact that by doing so, the teams are also getting a competitive advantage, especially if they're going and getting some reconnaissance, even on the short span of just a couple of 100 kilometers on one of these filming days or whatever, or unlimited mileage. Doesn't matter if it's in 2018 specification car. I mean, these cars that they're driving right now are just a bit of an evolution on that design. I mean, they haven't changed too drastically in the past couple of years. But still, I mean, you're still going to learn a lot about that track if you're running in an older specification car, and I think that's very good. So Seidel said he was very happy about the fact that the FAA and Formula One had decided to put a ban on that. And, you know, it really isn't fair. I mean, a lot of these teams, obviously, they have the financial resources to do so. And I think that by doing so, it would have sent a wrong message, very much like Seidel says in his comments, that it would just go against the spirit of all these cost-cutting measures that that they agreed to this year. First of all, because of the shutdown that was, had to be brought in because of COVID, and then the whole cost cap that they've all agreed to come in for 2021. So I think that's a good thing. I mean, you got to leave a little bit of unpredictability in the sport. I mean, not to the point where it's dangerous, of course, but, I mean, the thing is, Formula One is supposed to be a challenge on all fronts, not just in the car or out of the car and in the factory. All aspects of Formula One, I think, need to be challenging. I mean, if it was a filming day and you're driving around the streets of London or New York or Tokyo, whatever, right? That's something different. I mean, you're getting out and interacting with the fans so they can take pictures and hang out with the drivers and stuff like that. And the old normal, not the new normal, of course. But that to me is like what a filming day is. You're going around even on these funny spec tires that are compound tires that they have for the filming days. You're still getting an idea of what the track is like. You're still getting something positive out of that you can use to your advantage. For the race. Franz Tost, the team principal at AlphaTauri, aka Toro Rosso, believes that the definition of what a constructor is in Formula One is out of date, and that teams should be able to buy parts from rival teams. So this is kind of interesting because, you know, it is... Formula One, it's strange that way, right? I mean, we're sort of stuck in this whole Racing Point, this Pinka Mercedes controversy, debate, battle, whatever you want to call it, that's been going on for quite a while. I mean, I know that they've ruled that the brake ducts that they have are not legal, that they're too much of a copy of Mercedes. And yeah, I mean, I think it's fine for the when it comes to that each and every car out there has to be uniquely designed. But why not in the interest of cost cutting, why not have more common parts that they all use that come from a common source, or you're able to buy them from somewhere else? And that gets into that whole listed and unlisted parts things. But anyways, Franz Tost's opinion when it comes to this is obviously it's quite contrary to a lot of his contemporaries and his peers in the Formula One paddock. Saying that that this whole thing that the definition of a constructor is out of date, and the FAA also went on to confirm that they want to make sure that all the teams fully comply with the requirements, design their own listed parts. But Franz Tost believes that his team should be able to take more of an advantage of the relationship that they have with Red Bull, which is obviously the A team and the B team, if you want to call it that. I mean, they do have a lot of resources that they have, even though they're separate teams. Anyways, Tost had to say, quote, "The personal opinion from my side is that the team should be able to buy much more from another team. Why? Because for me, this philosophy that every team must be a constructor is out of date. I know all the F1 purists say, we must be a constructor. Every team must design everything in-house. The question is, the engineers are saying this, but how do you finance everything? Because we reach such a high level on the technical side, the top teams have such a fantastic infrastructure. If someone wants to come into F1, even the teams which are in F1, if they want to catch up, this is very difficult and nearly impossible. And you spend millions, and I'm just asking, what for? I'm asking, why does every team have to have its own wind tunnel, to have its own CFD, and have 500-600 employees? Okay, now there is a cost cap coming, but nevertheless, in my opinion, we still spend too much money, especially now under these difficult economic circumstances. But the regulation is how it is. Personally, I still think back to the days when we came to F1 with Toro Rosso and we got a one-year-old car from Red Bull Technology and we could race with a third of the money," end quote. Well, certainly it is an interesting thought that he has. And I don't know if I really like the idea of a team that's down the order a little bit, sort of a midfield team running like they used to in the old days, like a one-year-old Red Bull, and just throw some Toro Rosso or AlphaTauri livery on it, and there you go. You got like a different team. I like the idea that each and every team is designing and building their own individual unique cars. But I do see the sense in what he's saying, especially from the point of view that when it comes to a lot of the parts, like why do all these teams need like a wind tunnel? Well, obviously there's the aerodynamic development. I can see that, but you know, like when it comes to a lot of the widgets and the common parts and everything, why not just have a common source for them and they're all using the same thing? But at the end of the day, would that really make a huge cost saving thing? I don't know if you're buying a box of widgets, whether or not that would have a huge savings or impact on the finances of a team. Building and financing and running a wind tunnel, obviously, yes, because that's a multi-million dollar facility in terms of designing and building and running and maintaining something like that. I mean, that's a big piece of hardware. And I mean, it does obviously a very serious job, but I guess the question to be is where exactly does he think that needs to go? But certainly from a point of maybe sharing common points. I know there's been talks over the years of maybe having like a a common gearbox that would kind of be issued to all the teams. So you know, I mean, there definitely are different ways to explore that. But it's interesting the twist that the Tost is taking on that that he sees it through the eyes of or the definition of that that constructor really isn't what it, or at least in his opinion, it constructor today isn't what it used to be in Formula One. Anyways, Toto Wolff, just sort of sticking with this theme and the whole controversy we've seen with the pink Mercedes at Racing Point being basically a carbon copy of last year's Mercedes W10. Toto says that any suggestion or accusation that maybe Mercedes had something to do in Racing Point's attempt to copy their 2019 W10 is what he calls total nonsense. So anyways, Racing Point, they were hit with recently with a 15-point Constructors' Championship penalty and fined €400,000 after they were found to have actually copied the brake duct design from Mercedes' 2019 car. So the team, and this is a Racing Point, they've been quite open saying that they attempted to reverse engineer the Mercedes W10 using photographs of the car, and they did so within the regulations. And you know, there's several people that higher up in the team there that said that the initial results that they had was that they took quite a big fallback or drop down in performance before they started you know, finding some of the gains that that they've been working with now. I really couldn't see somebody like, especially like a Mercedes, like getting involved in something so risky. It just doesn't fly with me. Anyways, Toto Wolff had to say that he felt it wasn't right that there was any suggestion that Racing Point had gone and used anything other than their own photography to designing their car. And he said that he would stick up for his team for any accusation that might be brought against them in the case. Anyways, Toto had to say, quote, copying the car more from photos is something we would know. That is why, from my perspective, is total nonsense to pursue that argument. I will be defending our brand firmly if somebody wants to go down that route, end quote. So there you go. I mean, that is a big accusation if somebody wants to go that far. But we've seen it over the years in Formula One. If somebody comes up with a good idea, then the other teams tend to copy it pretty quick. And I go back, of course, a longer time ago to the 90s when we had Ligier and Benetton. I think it was 1995. The two cars that both of these teams had, they were similar not quite, you know, the same arrangement that Red Bull have with Red Bull Racing and AlphaTauri, but there was a link between those teams, and I can't remember the exact model numbers now, but just go and Google Benetton and Ligier. I think it was 1995. I think maybe it was the Benetton B195 was the car. Anyways, they do look very, very similar, not identical, but still, you know, it is something that we've kind of seen before, but, you know, just going that route. And I'm surprised to hear Toto bring it up, but I guess maybe it would be at some point. I would be absolutely shocked if Mercedes were involved in anything perhaps underhanded or gave them some sort of tip or guidance on to do that. I just don't see any advantage. I mean, the risk far outweighs any potential advantage in doing so, in my mind. Anyways, time for one final break here on the show. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show, and time to start wrapping it up, but we're going to talk a little bit now to what I hinted off the top of the program, and that's just about the schedule and what we're going to see over the next couple of weeks and months as the schedule gets finalized and confirmed for the rest of the year. And, well, first of all, the one that's kind of a bit of a surprise, because it's kind of been a late addition to the discussions, because as far back as a couple of months ago, that once the discussions started coming out and the news that you know that there was going to be a reboot on the season and it was going to start at some point, and you know, some races were going to be postponed, others canceled outright for 2020, there were alternative venues that came up almost once those discussions started and started to circulate. But Turkey wasn't really one that was there. I mean, a lot of the tracks that were there were the ones that were going to be on the schedule this year at any rate. And then you had some others kind of popping up, like the Nürburgring, Hockenheim, some of these places like that. And that kind of made a little bit sense because, you know, tracks and venues that have recently held a Formula One race. I mean, we were at Hockenheim last year for the German Grand Prix. But it's really cool because, you know, Turkey, they haven't actually raced there in a good number of years. And I think it's a pretty cool track. I think it was 2011 was the last time that they actually had a Grand Prix there. But it sounds like it is it's almost a done deal that it's going to be you know, confirmed very, very soon, and it'll actually get a slot in November just before the yet to be confirmed back to back races in Bahrain, and then so it's going to come before those two races, and then the season finale at Yas Marina in Abu Dhabi in mid December. So if these get added, then that's going to bring us up to the 17 races, and that's like I was saying off the you know, the top of the show, if they can actually get to 17 races, I'm going to be so thrilled about that, because at some point, you know, we're kind of thinking, you know, well, everybody was diving for the rule book at one point several months ago. It's just like, well, how many races do we really need to even make it official for a world championship? Turned out it had to be eight on three continents, although I'm sure if things were really dire, they could have had some sort of extraordinary measures passed to make sure that, you know, that they could you know, award a world championship both to the winningest driver and the constructor. But I'll be honest, I mean, for the longest time, I thought if we could get to maybe 8 or 10 races, that would be fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to be, I don't think stretching too far, that when they said that they wanted to finalize the schedule somewhere between 15 to 18 races was, you know, that was going to be that magic number for them. And I really felt, well, you know, if we can get close to 15, that would be great. You know, if we could get to 18, that would be awesome. But I was skeptical, and no doubt about it. I mean, it isn't 100% confirmed yet, but it sounds like it is just more formalities than anything else. I mean, a lot of the drivers are excited about going back there. Roman Grosjean said it would be mega, and a lot of drivers that are actually racing in Formula One have actually raced there. It's well, not a lot, but enough. Lewis has raced there. Sebastian Vettel, Kyle, Kimi Raikkonen, and Sergio Perez have all raced there in a Formula One car. And Grosjean won there in GP2 in 2008 and 2011. And yeah, so it'd be pretty cool. I mean, you got that really cool corner. It's a quadruple apex left-hander. That's turn eight. And it was really spectacular. And the thing is, they haven't been there in the modern specification cars. I mean, obviously, that is a big amount of time between 2011 and 2020. I mean, the amount that these cars have changed in 9 years is exponential. But it would be really cool to see that. You know, Alex Albon said that he's looking forward to it, and he predicts that it would be easy to take that turn eight flat out in the current generation of cars. So it could be quite spectacular. So, anyways, another track that was under consideration recently was Jerez in Spain, which, you know, they haven't been to for a good number of years. The other two races that were still being considered recently were both Vietnam and China, but apparently those did fall off a little time ago, and they weren't seriously considered. But I mean, like I say, I mean, it's disappointing. I was very much looking forward to seeing the the Turkish Grand Prix, but the Vietnamese Grand Prix, but I think that Turkey would be a cool one to come back onto the circuit, especially in such a bizarre year that we've seen this year. And if they can pull it off, like I said, I think that's absolutely fantastic. So anyways, that'll be confirmed. I know a couple of times on the shows that I've done recently, it seems every time that the show's been, you know, it's gone out for download, and wake up the next morning and, oh yeah, you know, I was talking about that last night, maybe we'll see these races on the schedule. Wake up to the news the following morning that, hey, now it's been confirmed, but it's all good. But happy to see that that if we can get close to, if we get 17 in the end, I think that's great, considering I was honestly quite skeptical, expecting far, far less. And we said just a couple of quick items of news here. Mercedes said it's very unlikely that they've resolved the problems that they've had with the tires in recent weeks, and that comes from James Vowles, who's their chief strategist. And this is despite that they had a very, very good race in Spain and didn't experience the same problems that they had with the blistering and the tire punctures that we saw at the two races in Silverstone. And Vowles, he credited what he called the incredible work of the team to address the blistering issues before Barcelona. And that's the thing with Mercedes, though, right? And I was talking about it, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but it seems every time that these guys hit a bump in the road that they're able to figure it out and come back even stronger. Now, of course, Barcelona is only a one-off spot. It can be a very challenging track for tires as well, but still, I mean, they did do a good job in Spain last weekend. But of course, if there is any track where they're going to know or have the best indication of how they expect some certain aspect of the car to behave, it's going to be Barcelona, just because they know the track so much and they have so much data there. Anyways, Toto Wolff says that this engine party mode ban can actually make Mercedes faster in a race, which I think is a little bit ominous. Anyways, the FAA let the teams know last week that they only are going to allow one engine mode for qualifying in the race, and that's going to be confirmed in a technical directive before the Belgian Grand Prix next weekend. Anyways, a lot of people around felt that that was just a way to maybe kind of pull in Mercedes a little bit. And you know, they're the ones that you know, their party mode in qualifying in the races, whenever they use it, is really quite spectacular. So there is that speculation. So Toto Wolff had to say, quote, "I think the primary goal of the FAA was to implement the rule to better understand and better analyze what was going going on with the engines. It's a very complex method between the combustion engine and all the energy recovery system, and having one mode, it becomes more easy for the FAA to really see everything and is in compliance. Goes on to say, it has always been the case in F1, pulling back the leaders, or supposedly are the leaders, is something that is good for the sport. We see it very much as a challenge. We have a good quality mode, and we're able to give it a little bit more power in the last session. But if that is not possible anymore because everything needs to be smoothed out over the race, then that's not a deficit for us. On the contrary, we think we can translate it into more performance in the race. That is something that is a great challenge for us that we'll take on once the rule is implemented. So that's a little bit of a shot across the bow there. So I wonder if one of these these things that's maybe meant to be well intended may actually, pun intended, might backfire on them. But we'll see soon enough next weekend in Belgium whether or not that's actually going to do something and or not. Anyways, Andreas Seidel, team principal at McLaren, said that his team is not going to give up in the championship and is still fighting and is still very much in the hunt for third place in the Constructors' Championship. As I was mentioning, just coming back from break not so long ago, that they're currently fourth, just behind Racing Point, but they're really in the thick of it there with the Racing Points and the Ferraris. So that's going to change all season long. But it really would be good for them if they can actually pull it off, because I think it would be just an excellent indicator of how far that this team has actually come over the past couple of years. I mean, it's not all that long ago since they were really wallowing at the bottom there, really, really in a bad place when they repartnered with Honda there. And, you know, it's good to see that even though that they split from Honda, that both of these, both McLaren and Honda are doing good things, with different people, so to speak. I mean, they've had some good performance. I think they've done pretty decent with the Renaults since they split, and likewise Honda's gone on to do some pretty good things with Red Bull. I mean, they've already won a number of races, and I think that was absolutely crucial in them staying in the sport. But I don't think third is out of the question for McLaren. I think that's interesting too that they're doing pretty good this year. They didn't, at least the language that was coming out from Woking earlier in the year was that they didn't really expect to maybe be as strong this year, because they were going to start focusing on next year's car and for 2022, and maybe that might affect their fortunes this year, kind of have that pay off a little bit further down the road. But if that car is just that much better, that'll be even more of a payoff for them. But certainly it's good to see them doing so well at the moment. Anyways, just to finish up here, Lewis Hamilton said he hopes something positive comes up for his rival Sebastian Vettel. Obviously these guys, they've gone at it before in recent years. Sebastian obviously having a horrible time this year. I mean, his Ferrari SF1000, not a good car, and he's struggling each and every weekend. Just can't find any speed in it, despite getting chassis changed and all, trying all these different things. Anyways, we know that he's out of a Ferrari at the end of the year to make way for Carlos Sainz. Anyways, Lewis had the following to say, quote, "I've made comments in the past, but I saw the difficult race he had previously at Silverstone, and all I can try to do is empathize with the position he's in and try to be understanding, because it could never be a great feeling to have been told that you're not wanted to continue within the team, especially when you join a team and get into a team and you give you all, you give your heart. But I think the way he is pushing and the way he's continuing to try and help the team, I think it just shows the great character he has and his commitment to racing. I really hope something positive comes up for him moving forwards," end quote. Yeah, I think that's a really classy thing of Lewis Hamilton to say, and I really hope that something positive comes out for Sebastian Vettel for 2021 as well. I mean, it seems like the only realistic option he has left for next year is to go to Racing Point or Aston Martin, as it's going to be. But certainly that remains to be said and done. But it's a little bit disappointing to see Sebastian struggling where he is, and also Charles Leclerc. I want to see these guys up there fighting with Mercedes and fighting with the Red Bulls, and just hasn't been a good year for them at all. Anyways, that's it. That's it for the show this week. It's time to wrap it up here. Thank you very much for listening and downloading the show. If you want to support the show, easiest and best way to do so is just to go to Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice and leave a 5-star rating and review or whatever you feel is right. And certainly the better the review and the rating, the is better for us, obviously. It helps the show grow, and that would be most appreciated. Anyways, if you have any feedback or comments, or you just want to say hi, easiest way is to do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod, or if you want to send me an email, you can also do that at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's it. That's a wrap. Obviously, no post-race report this week because it's the weekend off. So enjoy your free time this weekend, and we'll be back next week to preview the Belgian Grand Prix. Already stoked for that one. Until then, have a great weekend. Have a great week. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.